It was 2 years ago that Mark Russell announced his retirement after one final show at the Chautauqua Institution. But he still has a website where he posts topical material, and Russell does the occasional live appearance like the one coming up at the Riviera. When we reached him on the phone the other day, I asked him if he's really retired.
When I started doing this over 50 years ago, I made a solemn pledge to myself that I would retire should the day ever come when I was expected to write a song about transvaginal ultrasound. And as you know, that day arrived. Well, then I came out of retirement last summer when those congressmen went skinny dipping in the Sea of Galilee, you recall.
Yeah, yeah. And you had something to say about that.
Yeah, well, it was, I couldn't avoid it. I thought, what's next? Are they going to play handball against the Wailing Wall in Jerusalem? Who knows? But I'll tell you, I'm sitting here in Washington today, and I'm thinking maybe we should have a new national motto, you know, to replace E Pluribus Unum, one out of many, or land of the free and the home of the brave. And as we are perched here on the edge of the fiscal cliff, maybe our new motto should be, don't look down.
I kind of thought you'd have something to say about the fiscal cliff.
As we know, in the Bible, it tells in the Garden of Eden, the first man was Adam and the first woman was Eve. We don't know the name of the snake. So let me guess, Grover Norquist. He's the guy who held a gun to the heads of hundreds of members of Congress, making them pledge to renounce thinking for themselves or have a no-tax pledge. And so as we get ready to jump off the fiscal cliff, we should say to Grover Norquist, you first, Grover.
Your take on the outcome of the presidential election?
Well, I honestly didn't care who won. I really didn't. I was prepared in either event. I think the genius of our American system is that we have the ability to weed out the wackos in the primaries. We have sort of an institutional wacko weed whacker. And so I was fine with Romney. He came to me for advice at one time, and I said, Mitt, take my advice. You just got to try to relax and be one of yourselves. And so he was gracious in defeat. He and Mrs. Romney went back to one of their houses, put the dog back on the roof of the car, and put the car in the elevator.
I'm sure you're going to be sharing a lot of these stories on Friday night.
Oh, you get the impression I'm just trying out material here?
Maybe.
You know, it's going to be a lot of fun to go to North Tonawanda because that's where my roots are, going back to the days when I was a young lad growing up on a cotton plantation in Kenmore, or as Kenmore was known in those days, South Tonawanda.
South Tonawanda, never that heard that. Yeah.
During the Civil War between the North and the South, which is still going on today, I understand. It's called high school football.
Yeah, yeah. Talk about your early years. How did the TV show get started?
Well, I was working in Washington. I had sort of a dead-end gig at a hotel in Washington. And Mike Collins and a couple of other guys from WNED came into this place, and it was during Watergate. And so they said, we'd like you to come to Buffalo and do... I'm not sure if they knew I was even from Buffalo. And just do a show, do exactly what you're doing here for this crowd. And so I did. And we did a show. We did the pilot in the old Statler Hotel. And it was September the 8th, 1974. The reason I remember the date, it was right after Nixon resigned, and then President Ford pardoned Nixon. And it was kind of a nice sunny day in Buffalo, and none of us knew about this pardon. It came over the news like late Sunday afternoon. Nobody's watching the news. I didn't know about the pardon, and the audience didn't know about the pardon. But when we shopped this show around to the member stations around the country, and by now everybody knew the pardon, and they said, well, how topical is this guy? He didn't even know about the pardon. So that made us determine that the show had to be literally live, and so you could see the literalness of it from time to time over the years when I would hit a clinker on the piano, or somebody would drop something backstage, and we couldn't edit that out. So that was part of the fun, but it was also the immediacy of it. Like if something happened in the news late in the day, and I write a song about it. And not trusting the memory, so we literally would get some duct tape and tape the words of the song on the bottom of the lens of the camera.
Do you consider yourself an equal opportunity satirist, that you take on Democrats and Republicans the same way?
Yeah, which is to offend the audience, but half of them, but not at the same time. And I did that not out of any sense of fairness, but self-survival, because in the old days when I would be working in D.C. and people would be late at night, I used to do a show at 1 o'clock in the morning, and so they would be imbibing heavily, and they're easily offended. And so I would say something about Nixon, and then a guy would come up out of the audience ready to knock my lights out, and then I'd switch over to Kennedy or Lyndon Johnson, whoever that was. So that was pure self-survival, self-defense. So on PBS, they were funded by the government, and the people say, oh, that's nothing but liberals on PBS. I always point out that Julia Child was on PBS, and she was also in the OSS, a forerunner of the CIA, and the great ultra-liberals like William F. Buckley and so forth.
What do you think of these satirists of today, particularly Jon Stewart and Stephen Colbert?
Well, I like them both. I mean, they are the gold standard, no question about it. For a long time, we didn't have Comedy Central here in Washington, D.C. We figured that C-SPAN would suffice. and I had been hearing about Jon Stewart, and finally I saw the show. And what struck me about it, there was a sort of a quick passing line. It wasn't even political. He was talking about how jazz was invented by the blacks. The blacks invented jazz, and the white people turned it into Kenny G. that's pretty clever.
Yeah,
pretty good. Incidentally, both the Colbert and Stewart last year had a concert on the National Mall here in Washington, and I'm telling you, it was almost as big a crowd as the Obama inaugural. I mean, they just went from the Capitol building almost all the way back to the Washington Monument, and so I imagine two comedians to do that. Because comedians of that type, satirists, sort of take no prisoners, satirists would be working in, dark little sub-terrestrial nightclubs. And here they are with about a million people down there in the National Mall.
Do you miss the TV show?
Yeah, I do, especially when something goes on in the news. Particularly, the show went off in 2004. And so since that time, we had two monumental presidential elections, 2008, and then the recent one, which were unsurpassed in terms of comedy material. My gosh, the whole thing between Hillary and Obama, and then these primary people. And I'm still talking about the people in the primary because it's important to know who Romney defeated. When you look at that list there, You have Michelle Bachmann and Rick Perry, Herman Cain, Rick Santorum, and Newt Gingrich, which is like beating the Three Stooges and Laurel and Hardy. And we haven't heard the last from any of them. I mean, they'll be back.
Yeah.
They'll be back. The pilot light is still lit and the fire in their bellies.
Well, Mark, thanks so much. We look forward to seeing you in Buffalo on Friday night.
Okay, thank you, Mark. That's North Tonawanda.